support for OPB comes from our members and from our sponsors, like Mike Rosenberg from Columbia Credit Union. Mike says they trust what they see and hear on OPB, and that aligns with Columbia Credit Union's brand.
This is Think Out Loud on OPB. I'm Dave Miller. We're going to end this week by revisiting a conversation we had about a year ago. It was part of our series focused on professions. We were interested in what it takes to do various kinds of work, the skills, the craft, the tools, but also how folks end up in their jobs and how those jobs can change you. David Beer is a repair person who focuses specifically on accordions. He calls himself the squeeze box surgeon. We visited him in his tidy Southeast Portland workshop. I asked him how he got started.
I've tinkered around with an accordion for a really, really long time. Found one when I was like 20, and mainly just wanted to learn how to fix it for myself. Realized I couldn't really figure it out. Kept trying over and over again. Worked in restaurants pretty much my whole life. And I was trying to get out of restaurants and found first a school that was doing a 9-month program in Superior, Wisconsin. And they weren't doing the program anymore. But so they were doing short courses.
There had been a 9-month course.
Yeah, she did a full accredited program, yeah.
And then she closed it down because there weren't enough students?
Yeah, that was part of it. Yeah. Huh. It was hard to get people that would go the whole way through it.
But you had been interested in that. You were as part of the plan to transition out of restaurant work.
Yeah,
you thought I'm gonna get the license.
Totally, yeah. And I was like, this will be perfect. This will be my way out if I can just figure out how to afford to go back to school for 9 months.
Yeah. So, but that wasn't an option.
Right.
What
happened, I was working at a restaurant and had just left and was on a vacation visiting my family down in Arizona, my parents in Arizona, and had been following the website and checking up on it for the museum in Wisconsin over and over again. And she posted a short intro course. I think it was like 6 or 7 days long. And I jumped on it. it was limited to like 5 people, and I got in, which was great.
And that was possible and probably more affordable than 9 months.
Totally. And it didn't give me near enough information, but it gave me enough information to know that I was still very much interested and that I needed to find out more.
But I feel like I'm still missing some details here. Mm-hmm. So what was it? Because if you didn't want to spend the rest of your life working in restaurants, mm-hmm. I imagine there are some variety of other directions you could go. Mm-hmm. But deciding you want to fix accordions is a really specific direction.
Right.
What was it about fixing accordions that made you think, this is what I want to do?
I think it was a couple of different things. One, I've always loved accordions. I love the way they sound. It's funny that people talk about, you know, music striking a chord inside you. But like the sound of an accordion does that for me more than any other instrument.
It's like I feel it for a while,
since I was young.
Huh. Do you remember the first time you heard an accordion?
No, I don't, which is weird. But I do remember like being surrounded by polka music and stuff as a child in the Midwest. And when I was living in Minneapolis in the early 80s, going to a lot of punk shows and staying up late a lot, but also sneaking into the church basements in North Minneapolis and watching the polka bands and the old couples dancing around to polka music.
How old were you when you were both going to punk shows and sneaking in to see old people dance?
Probably
polkas.
Early 20s.
Huh.
Yeah. And Minneapolis in the 80s was pretty heavy in independent music scene. I mean, Husker Du and Replacements and lots of other bands. it was interesting to have that much variety.
Yeah, and you soaked in all of it.
Mm-hmm.
Did you think, I want to play the accordion? This is an instrument that gives me joy. It strikes a chord in me for some reason. I want to play it?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. Yeah, and also couldn't afford it and also didn't know how to find out how to learn how to play one and stuff. But found one in a garage, and that's when I found the one in the garage sale and ended up carrying it around thinking, I will learn how to fix it and then I will teach myself how to play.
Step one, fix this broken accordion. Yeah. Step two, learn how to play it.
Yeah.
I've heard that for you personally, there's a connection between playing accordion and stopping smoking.
Oh, yeah.
What's the connection?
So I had carried that accordion around for, the majority of my life.
The one you got in your 20s.
Yeah, exactly. And then moved to Portland in 99. Was going to try and quit smoking again for who knows which time that one was. I'm like, I'm working part-time and I don't have much to do and I have this accordion, so maybe if I'm playing accordion when instead of smoking, that'll help. So I found a teacher, Luigi Rangan, who died a while ago, but he was a great teacher. He laughed at my broken accordion and made me go buy a new one. Not brand new, of course, but yeah, I took lessons from him for a long time off and on, and at that time, I did quit smoking, which is nice. It's
because it was something to do with your hands.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I want a cigarette, so I'll go down to the basement and try to play accordion for a little bit.
Were you also doing restaurant jobs then?
Yeah.
Because I imagine you couldn't just take an accordion break. You weren't bringing your accordion to work.
No, actually, at that time, I was had started my own chocolate business. So I was working from home, so
okay,
it made
so,
it a lot
so
easier.
So you could, yeah, and yeah, when you have a craving, you would just play a little bit of a polka?
Yeah, normally not polkas, but yeah. I like polkas, but they're not my favorites, yeah.
What, and you tried to fix that first one up?
Oh yeah, a bunch of times.
What made it hard? Maybe the question is what didn't.
Yeah, what didn't is a good question. What didn't make it hard was some of it, the physicality of things were easy to figure out. Like I could tell where gaskets were on things and could tell when things were leaking because of screws or, you know, some of the mechanical stuff I could pick up pretty easily. But a lot of the other stuff I couldn't. Like I had no idea at that time what was holding all the reeds down to the reed block was beeswax, and that's why I couldn't figure out how to make them stay back on. And
literally beeswax?
Yeah, it's beeswax mixed with rosin, for the most part. And
that's what holds the reeds on.
Mm-hmm. On most accordions, yeah.
Why?
It provides a really good airtight seal, a good sonic solid grounding to the reed block, so you get a good vibration going through, and it's also very easy to take the reed off and put it back on. It's messy sometimes. If the wax is new enough, you can just soften it up and pull it off and get it back on and reheat the wax and get it to work, but a lot of times you have to clean off all the old wax and then re-wax it with new wax.
So that was just one of the things that you didn't know.
Oh, yeah.
When you got this this old accordion. What makes an accordion a challenging machine to keep running or to fix up?
For one, there's a couple thousand parts in them.
Really? Literally thousands of parts?
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Like this. So we have one right in front of us here.
Mm-hmm. That's a small one, yeah.
It says Universe. Oh, is that supposed to be Universal?
Yeah,
but the
yeah,
A and the L have fallen off. Right. Universe actually sounds sort of fun, too.
Yeah, it's fun sometimes how they end up changed.
So, is this a good example of one to show us the workings of an accordion?
Yeah, I think so. It's a pretty basic piano accordion, a 120 bass. This is the bass side. It has 120 buttons. Full-size keyboard on, or a full-length keyboard on the top, but it's got narrower keys. It's a student, or sometimes called a ladies' module, which I don't like, but student. So it's a little. The keys are a lot closer together. Some of the other ones have much bigger keys.
Is this one that a client dropped off for you to fix up?
Totally. He also dropped off two really nice accordions, and this one is definitely a lower end one, but it's the one he learned on as a kid, and he wants to fix it up so his kid can learn on it.
Huh. All right. So he brought it in, mm-hmm, and did he know what was wrong with it?
He knew a few things. He knew that it had some air leaks, which I did find a couple. There's some loose screws, and between the bellows and the body of the accordion on both sides, there's gaskets, and those gaskets are leaking and need to be replaced. Some of the other things he knew is the register switches are really sticky. These control the voices on the piano side. This one has two voices, octave apart. There's a low octave and a high octave, and so you can play both or one or the other at a time.
How long might it take you to do the work on this? Seems like maybe not the biggest job.
No, not too big. Probably 6 hours total, I bet. Hmm.
And
4 to 6, depending on some of the things I haven't checked out completely, so it might take a little bit longer.
Could we hear a little bit?
Sure. That should be with both voices on this side. There's a bad sounding one.
So there's a buzz there?
Yeah, definitely.
When you hear that buzz, do you know that's something you're going to have to look into?
Yeah, it's probably a readout of alignment. The reeds are metal reeds. It's a free reed instrument, so it's mounted on one end of the reed, and then the reed vibrates in the channel, and it's out of alignment a little bit, so it's hitting the side of the channel. there's also some other weird noises I noticed. Like this one, it takes a little bit long to sound. And some of them have this weird, like, gurgly sound sometimes when you play soft. And those are valves that are loose. Yeah, it's got a few valves loose. It sounds like it's just service stuff, basically. The valves end up curling if they sit a long time, which I can pop it open and show you what the reeds look like. And
yeah. So this one I can see in the back. It says made in Italy, serial number 2139.
Yep.
When do you think this was made?
This one I'm guessing is probably 60s.
Hmm.
You kind of pick by style. They aren't really marked by dates usually. So yeah, you kind of have to guess by the style unless you know what period the manufacturer was in business.
So it's 60 or 70 years old at this
point.
Exactly.
Yeah, which also means that the wax is holding in the reeds is probably hitting that age where, depending on how well it's been stored and how nice the wax was to begin with, it may be starting to get brittle and maybe to a point where it needs to be completely rewaxed.
So there are bees right now that are making wax for new accordions?
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they're special bees.
Are you?
No.
Okay. I would have believed that. I'm in an accordion shop, so I've suspended a lot of ideas I might otherwise have had about journalistic, you know,
I will point
rigor.
To keep things up.
So the top is off, and it now is in two halves.
Right.
Oh. It almost looks like they are in this half, the piano side that had the ones mm-hmm. that look like piano keys. It's as if it's a sort of like a xylophone, three double-sided xylophones.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. It's the reed tongues that are in there kind of do look like, yeah. I never thought about it that way. Oh, and here's some of the loose valves I was talking about, just kind of laying in there.
Are those pieces of wood?
They're pieces of leather.
Huh. Didn't see that coming.
You can get a couple of these.
This is not a vegan instrument.
Oh, God, no. Somebody asked me that once, what it would take to make a vegan accordion.
That's a very Portland question.
I don't know if you can do it. Yeah. So I think it was in Portland where I got asked, probably.
It has beeswax and leather. Any other animal products?
Well, on the older ones, hide glue. A lot of it's hide glue that's holding it together, or, you know, that's been used as glue.
I mean, it's not like string instruments with catgut are particularly animal-friendly either. What happens, and the air is supposed to go through, but what happens if you just sort of move it with your fingers?
On each side there's a reed. Oh, there's the one that was buzzing.
Oh.
And it's just out of alignment hitting on the side.
So how would you fix that one?
That one here, I'll put it on the tables, which makes it a little easier to tell what it's doing.
That wasn't subtle.
No, it wasn't.
I think even I could see that there was something.
Hurry.
Oh, you have a little... So you have a bellows on your workbench where
yes.
you can force air in or out
right
through this reed block as if it were in the accordion.
Yeah, which makes it a lot easier to do testing things like this instead of having to do it inside the accordion.
Oh, and you can force it just through one of the holes.
Right.
Okay. So can we hear the problem again then?
Yeah. I think it was this one. Yep. There it is. There. And what's wrong is the reed is just slightly out of alignment. Which, if it's not too bad, you normally can nudge it back over. Occasionally, you have to take it off and re-nail the nail.
So you're just sort of pushing it a little bit.
Yep, I think that might have been far enough. Yep, that got it.
Oh, and it sounds like what you're really paying attention to is the quietest parts there where the vibration starts to slow, and that's when the buzzing was the bigger issue.
And that's normally where you can also tell where the valves are not working quite as well, if they're curly and stuff. Like, I bet that one's kind of going to go gurgle.
Although I have to say, if that's 60 plus years old, and if those pieces of the little leather straps...
The reed valves.
They seem... I would have guessed that they would be more worn after 60 plus years.
They don't do much besides just kind of flop open and depending on where the air goes. And actually, this one looks like it's been played a lot, which
is
good.
How can you tell?
Because the reed valves are still sitting tight to the reeds. They've got a few that are curling a little bit.
Are they like cars or a lot of machines where... if you use it regularly, they're actually going to be
totally.
In better shape.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of times in accordions, it's sat too long. It's a lot of work. for instance, like this side, it's easy to tell. This is the bottom of the accordion. All of the reeds are pointing up along with the valves. And over time, if they're just sitting, the gravity just pulls them over. Like that one's already starting to go.
Huh. It reminds me of a line that I just read, that accordions are maybe... one of the only or the only instrument that you have to hug to play.
I know. It's kind of one of the things I like about them.
So is that a famous line about accordions?
Yeah. I don't know who said it, but I've heard it before. Yeah.
I mean, because I guess what made me think of it was this idea that when things are used or loved, or people too, they're more likely to be healthier.
Yeah, totally true. Huh. Yeah. And part of it is, it wants to breathe and you're hugging it makes it breathe. And
literally.
Yeah. If it's not breathing, then all of the things that it uses to breathe get... The leathers get dried out and hard. The valves get... or the reeds get full of dust and dirt. It wants to breathe.
I understand. Did you go to Italy as well?
Yes.
In addition to going to Wisconsin?
Yes.
As part of your training?
Yeah, I did the Wisconsin... like week-long intro course, and then I think within a month or two after that I found out about the courses in Italy and signed up for those right away and went for 2.5 weeks I think the first time for some pretty in-depth training and all accordion repair, which was nice because being in Europe I got to see more of the button accordions. And then after that, I went back to the museum for another like month and a half to study with Helmi, the person who runs the museum. And then back to Italy the next year for another week of training.
And at this point, at what point in that sort of odyssey did it seem like your plan was going to work? That you were going to be able to actually shift careers and make a living repairing accordions?
I think it was fortunate that all this was happening during the pandemic, to be honest. 2018, I think, was when I went to Wisconsin, and then 2019, I think, was the last time to Italy, if I remember right. And I was working a part-time job at a chocolate company still. And ended up on unemployment because of COVID and could focus on the business and started getting more and more people bringing accordions in. And then it felt like it was actually going to work.
What did the pandemic mean for accordion playing?
I think a lot of people were like, hey, I have this in my basement and I don't know what to do with it.
Huh.
And I got a lot of those coming in, I think.
Like people who weren't making sourdough bread for the first time decided to dig out their grandmother's accordion?
Yeah, I think so. I think it was either, it seemed like, you know, maybe a quarter of them are like, how much is this worth? Which is usually nothing.
Really?
Yeah, usually. They don't really appreciate with age like violins.
Right. They're worth love and joy and community.
Yeah.
But they're not worth $500?
Some of them are. Even this one, like, once I get done doing service on it, it's worth, and you could sell it, buy it for like $350, $400.
But people were thinking, do I have a priceless heirloom? Is this
exactly,
antiques roadshow?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Level?
Especially since a lot of the older ones are covered with rhinestones. So it's like, oh, it's just so bedazzled.
But it's still a couple hundred bucks.
Yeah.
So that was some percentage of the people who'd come to you. But mm-hmm. but others, they had played it before, or they'd never even played it?
Never, mostly. Huh. And that there was like, I'm not doing anything, and I always kind of wanted to do it, and now I have time. Can I use this accordion? Can you make it work? And yeah.
Huh. And that was your start.
Yeah.
Well, but, so yeah. Has this, what about now? I mean, we're in the post-pandemic, seems like an absurd phrase,
yeah.
But certainly a different phase of endemicness of the virus, and life is opening up. Do you have a practice now of, or, you know, a going business concern?
I think things are still going up, which is really nice. So much of it is by word of mouth, and it's just taking time for that word to get out, I think. And there aren't really much for repairers in the area. It's, you kind of have to go quite a ways to get somebody.
You call yourself the squeeze box surgeon, mm-hmm. which, I mean, it's a great phrase. It also makes it seem like these are patients. Do they, when they come in, are any patients just too sick to save?
Oh, totally. the ones in the pandemic era, there was a good number of them that would show up that it's like, yeah, I could fix it, but it's going to cost like well over $1,000 and it's worth $200. So yeah, it's definitely happens, which is how we end up with parts accordions.
Oh, well, you can just, because they don't want them. Sometimes
yeah,
they would say,
times,
you can just have it.
Yeah. So I've got, a pile of accordions upstairs in the attic and in the basement.
And you know that there's some piece of something that you might salvage from that one for a new one you're working on.
That's what I'm hoping.
And or else you'll just have an entire attic.
I'm a horrible collector, yeah. Hopefully I haven't turned into my mom's pack rat.
When was the heyday of accordion popularity in this country?
Oh, probably the 40s and 50s.
And yeah, what was 30s and 40s, what would it have been like then?
People were playing accordion everywhere, and there were entertainers that were playing accordion. Guido and Pietro Darro are kind of like the first Italians to come over and make the accordion popular in the U.S., playing vaudeville era and stuff. And Guido was making like $600 a week in the 20s, and he had his own railroad cars and stuff.
Wow. Like a rock star.
Totally.
Huh. Do you think... I'm not going to ask if that could happen again, but do you think there, in addition to, I have an accordion in my basement and it's, you know, April of 2020 and I'm going crazy, so let me fix it up. Setting that aside, do you think that there's the possibility for more interest in accordions going forward?
I hope so, and I think so. The accordion's pretty popular everywhere outside of the U.S. and always has been. And it's definitely, I think, picking up steam here in different cultures and things. It's also, if you really do pay attention when you're listening to like commercials, pop music, any of it, it pops in so many different little spots and you don't normally even notice. And there's been like the whole resurgence in like world music kind of music and ethnic musics, I think is helping bring a lot of that back too.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
David Beer is an accordion repair person in Southeast Oregon. We spoke last year. Finally today, our managing producer, Shiraz Sadiq, joins me to read some of your recent feedback. Hey, Shiraz.
Hey, Dave. We talked recently about the U.S. Postal Service cutting back on rural deliveries, part of the U.S. Postmaster's Delivering for America plan.
Kevin Sieber wrote Delivering by Not Delivering. Louis DeJoy, along with most of the Republican Party, refuses to understand that profit is not the purpose of the job. The purpose is to provide that service, even when, or especially when, it isn't profitable or feasible for private companies to do so. It seems criminal that he is deliberately failing the mission and purpose of the agency he is in charge of.
Melissa Wetherill agreed. She said, something has to be done about DeJoy. It's a service, not something to squeeze profit out of.
And Kate Rosenstein Houston wrote, they've already cut back a ton. Just ask any rural community in the state. I used to work in Gaston, which shouldn't even be considered rural, but it is. And they've been underfunded and understaffed for decades.
We asked listeners to share memories of Camp Numanu, a summer camp on the banks of the Sandy River. It was recently added to the National Register of Historic Places. We got dozens of responses on Facebook and a ton of wonderful voicemails. Here's one we didn't get a chance to play from Kate in Portland, who went to the camp when she was in the fifth grade.
I grew up a large family. We were, you know, living paycheck to paycheck. I was the oldest of five kids, not a lot of money to, you know, do camp, but I was in Campfire Girls. And so as part of Campfire Girls, we sold the campfire mints. And if you sold a certain number of boxes, I think it was like 50 boxes, which was a lot, you know, that 50 years ago, you got a free trip to Camp Numanu. So my parents helped me a lot, and I was able to sell the 50 boxes and go to Camp Numanu. And it's one of those memories that just shines brightly for me always. I stayed in a cabin called Robin Hill that was at the top of this little steep hill. I remember running down the hill, and I remember the big open field where we played games. I remember canoeing. I remember singing, campfires. It was such an amazing time in my life, you know, growing up in Portland and being able to go to camp and kind of get away from my brothers and sisters for a few days. I even remember the song. I'm going to take a chance. It was, we are from Robin Hill and we get such a thrill when we go down that hill, I'm telling you. And in our memories dear to our hearts will be Camp Numanu, sure to shine all of the time. There are so many things I don't remember in my life, but this one I really remember.
We also talked recently about the lingering effects of the pandemic on student math scores. We asked what would help if your child were struggling with math.
Kate Comiskey wrote, smaller class size, more individual attention, progressive and creative instructional techniques, especially for kids with learning disabilities. Less focus on advanced math, more focus on applied math or programming.
Sharon Orella wrote, there is a form of dyslexia that involves numbers called dyscalculia. I would hazard a guess that there is a percentage of students with that disorder. Specialized help for those folks to improve their math skills would be a good start.
Rebecca Hannafin agreed. She wrote, teachers are not trained to teach students with dyscalculia. My struggling student gets supports for dyslexia. The school district has no supports for this.
Les Rogers wrote, we've had a massive shortage of special education teachers in Oregon for a quarter century, according to the Oregon Educational Association. The problem is worsening. Those are the teachers specialized in remediation and differentiation to support students. They're the ones I would go to as a general education teacher to get additional strategies as a teacher. We need qualified, skilled educators, and we are filling classrooms with emergency credentials.
Les went on to say, I have taught high school for a decade, including math, and Oregon has failed to make the investments necessary to stabilize the system. What helps with math is having skilled educators that can identify the step of the algorithm or process the student is getting stuck on and knows different strategies to overcome the issue. Also, we need to replace geometry with statistics in Oregon's math sequencing.
Finally, we talked recently about Oregon's second attempt to create a wildfire hazard map that, among other things, will outline areas where fire resources should be prioritized. We asked how you're thinking about fire preparedness.
Alan Thornton wrote, consult your local county and Oregon Department of Forestry for programs that have workshops, tours, and grants to help cover the cost of making your home fire-wise. The U.S. Forest Service worked on the 242 fire in Chiloquin in 2020. I witnessed three homes that were saved specifically because they participated in their FireWise program. I met the owner of one of the homes we helped protect. They showed me their before and after photos from doing the landscaping work, and it was amazing how perfectly it protected their home. It is worth the investment and effort.
We always welcome your comments, your questions, your advice in whatever form. Our email address is thinkoutloud@opb.org.
Our voicemail number is 503-293-1983. And on Facebook, we're at OPBTOL.
Thanks, Shiraz.
You're welcome, Dave.
If you don't want to miss any of our shows, you can listen on the NPR app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you like to get your podcasts. Our nightly rebroadcast is at 8 p.m. Thanks very much for tuning in to Think Out Loud on OPB and KLCC this week. I'm Dave Miller. Have a great weekend.
Think Out Loud is supported by Steve and Jan Oliva, the Rose E. Tucker Charitable Trust, Michael, Kristen, Andrew Kern, and Anna Sanford.